Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the third episode of the Alopecia Areata Awareness Podcast series on MedThority. I am Dr. Britt Craiglow, and I am so happy to be joined today by Dr. Layla Aspour, who I've had the pleasure of getting to know over the past year or so. And do you want to just introduce yourself briefly?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a consultant dermatologist with a hair interest. I'm based in the UK. And I've done a hair fellowship with Prof. Sinclair, and also had the opportunity to sit in with Britt, as well as Britt King, to see how things are done in the States with regards to alopecia areata.
It's so nice to have you here. So today we are going to be talking a little bit about the science, and I am a self-proclaimed non-scientist, but I do think that, you know, what we've learned over the past several years about alopecia areata is, you know, it's so important because that's really what's paved the way to really targeted therapies, which we'll talk about a little bit more on the next episode. But, you know, even I think when we were in training, we knew that alopecia areata was this inflammatory disease. We saw the swarm of bees around, you know, the hair bulb under the microscope, and we didn't really know that much more, right? But, you know, kind of fast forward to now, we have a much better understanding of the cells involved and how they communicate, and all of a sudden, you know, we have these treatments. So do you maybe want to, you know, kind of walk us through what's actually happening in AA?
It's important to note at this point that there's a lot we still don't know. And most importantly, we don't know what that initial trigger is. We still don't know what that first spark is that triggers it all. But what we do know, the main thing is that there's a genetic involvement. So there are genes that have been identified in alopecia areata. That's really important to make patients aware, because it helps them understand better and come to terms with the diagnosis. But also with regards to the cells, we know that the CD8 T cells infiltrate the root sheath of the hair follicle, and that then goes on to release interferon gamma. That then creates a loop where it increases interleukin 15 that further stimulates the production of interferon gamma that causes the destruction of the hair follicle epithelial cells, which is why we then have the hair follicle, the hairs fall out. So within that loop, there's the JAK-STAT pathways, and that's how we've then identified in terms of treatment targets.
The identification of this this specific population of T cells is so important. So, but I think it's also your point that we don't really understand that initial inciting event. And I think that's something that patients come in very fixated on the why, right? You know, why did this happen? And everybody kind of has a story like, oh, you know, a month before or a day before or 3 weeks before, you know, XYZ happened, right? Somebody was sick or they had a vaccine or there was a stressor, right? And I think it's important, you know, people have this genetic predisposition. And I, you know, personally, I think sort of the quote triggers are probably different for everybody and multifactorial, but that isn't really well understood. But we get this infiltration of T cells and they start communicating, and these cytokines, as you mentioned, interferon gamma and IL-15 are really the key drivers of the ship here. And importantly, you know, normally the hair follicle, you know, for those listening who maybe don't do a lot of hair dermatology, normally the hair follicle is a site of immune privilege, right? So normally we don't, those cells aren't allowed there, but this breaks down in the setting of sort of genetic, you know, genetics plus. But these cytokines, really importantly, kind of on both sides of this positive feedback loop that you mentioned, they are using JAK-STAT to signal, right? So I think about it kind of like a relay race where, you know, the cytokine comes, it passes the baton to its receptor on the surface of a cell, which then kicks off this intracellular signaling cascade to JAKs, then STATs down to the nucleus, which influences gene transcription, and then you get sort of this spiral of inflammation. And so I think, you know, there's probably a lot of other things happening, but for sure that kind of key basis is so important for us to understand, because now we have ways, you know, to modify it.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you can go ahead.
So Yeah, so absolutely. So this has been quite novel because it's not for many years we could understand the whole process in terms of, and that's why our therapies were not as effective. But we have some hypotheses, which we often can discuss with patients, of a variety of triggers, such as the theory around stress and, you know, like you said, about traumatic events that people can remember before they get their alopecia. Other have been around vaccines and infections influencing the interferon gamma and substance P. But there's a lot still we don't understand, such as about the microbiome and whether diet or, you know, changing your microbiome makes any difference. There's lots of different theories around that. Yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts, because I know that there have been people who've talked about fecal transplants and things like that, looking at targeting the microbiome. But I don't think it's ever been proven that makes a difference in terms of or cause alopecia areata if you target the microbiome.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting area of study. And, you know, what I tell patients now is that we know a lot, but there's still a lot that we don't know. And, you know, right now, I think there are some like slightly provocative things in case reports and, you know, a little bit of data to suggest that, you know, certain bacteria are more prevalent in patients with autoimmune disease, et cetera. But yeah. I don't think that we're really, you know, we're certainly not at a point to make recommendations, you know, based on those things. No. So I think, you know, when people come in and patients ask a lot about, you know, a lot about diet and stress mm-hmm. and these different things. And I think, again, for what we understand right now, you know, this is something that just sort of happens, right? And there isn't probably, at least at this point in time, something in somebody's environment that they can modify to make things different, right? And I think that's really important for patients because they come in and they feel very out of control and they want something to control, right? But right now we don't have any evidence that says diet makes a difference, that, you know, stress makes a difference. Now there's nothing wrong with having a healthy diet and trying to minimize stress, right? But for sure we you know, we don't know how those things, you know, play a role. But you know, we're getting there. We're getting closer and for sure having
for sure, yeah.
Let's actually talk about what JAKs are for those who may not be familiar. So JAKs are Janus kinases. This is a set of proteins, of which there are four. And these sit on the inside of the cell and they come in pairs. And again, they sort of modulate this signaling. And so, you know, when these cytokines are cycling through and causing more and more inflammation, these JAKs are just sort of like super turned on, right? They've got a lot of work to do. But all of a sudden we have medicines that come in and they can inhibit JAKs. So there are lots of, you know, different ways they can do that in terms of the way they bind and which JAKs they, you know, they attach to. But by and large, you know, what we've seen is that most JAK inhibitors sort of have a similar efficacy in terms of, you know, improving alopecia areata, not universally effective, but oftentimes can help. And I think what's really important is kind of understanding the timing of these things, right? In terms of treatment, it's very different from a lot of diseases that we see, right? Because, you know, we're used to, you know, giving a medicine and maybe in a week or two or three, we start to see, you know, improvement or reversal of disease, but that's really different in alopecia areata, right? And that's largely because of the hair cycle. So maybe you want to kind of tell us what's happening and why we have to wait.
Yeah. So, I mean, usually with JAKs and eczema, for example, you can see some kind of response within a few weeks. So within 4 to 6 weeks, and even within 3 months, they would have improvement in their scores and their outcome measures. But with hair biology, that's not the same. So it takes time to grow hair. So in alopecia areata, the anagen hair, so it's the part of the hair cycle, which is the growing phase, tends to be affected. So those hairs that are within that aspect, that particular period of the anagen, the end stage of anagen phase, that get affected and are the ones that then fall out. So it depends where your hair are within the hair cycle. And then with regards to the treatments, it takes, you know, it takes time to grow the hair. So it will take at least 3 to 6 months before you see any kind of response. And then some people, it can take even longer, depending on their hair cycling. Sometimes also what I've seen is when they regrow the hair, and that could be with any treatments, even with a Jax, is that sometimes the hairs, even though they grow thick and they grow long, they are still white in color, so they're not getting their natural hair color back. And that suggests that there might be still some disease there. There's some issue with the melanin, the pigment within the hair that's not being able to be pulled out by the keratinocytes, and that's why they remain active. They remain white, so that suggests active disease. And that has been seen with all types of treatments. So I guess there's a lot still, which proves that there's still a lot we don't know with regards to the underlying disease and in terms of, you know, understanding the treatments. But definitely with Jax, I've seen response where someone has regrown white hair and then they've, you know, you switch them a Jax inhibitor and they've definitely then gone to grow full, you know, full head of hair with a natural color.
Yeah, the variability in response is really interesting. But for sure, I would say most patients, at least initially when they start to have regrowth, it is often, you know, finer, more lightly pigmented, kind of more like vellus hair. But again, I think, you know, it's important for us to understand how these treatments work so that we can explain it to our patients also, because I think oftentimes our patients think that these medicines are growing hair, right? They're not really growing hair. They're taking the inflammation away, and therefore the hair is then allowed to grow, right? And so it first we have to get rid of the inflammation, then that hair cycle has to reset. And then importantly, we have to keep the inflammation away because this is a chronic disease. And in the next episode, we'll talk a little bit more of sort of the nitty gritty or logistics of JAK inhibitors, because these are, you know, for most people with severe disease are going to be chronic medicines, but they're coming in, they're dialing down the inflammation. So the hair actually isn't able to grow. They're not really kind of growing the hair per se. Great. So I think, you know, to kind of summarize here, we there's a lot we know, but there's a whole lot more that we don't know. We understand now, you know, that these specific T cells are very important in, you know, in causing inflammation and this positive feedback loop with, you know, cytokine signaling, interferon gamma, IL-15 are very important. There are other cytokines that are also likely playing a role. And we know, you know, that oftentimes people respond to JAK inhibitors, but not everybody does. So there, we may sort of have these different phenotypes or, you know, genotypes really probably, that kind of influence response to treatment. So we're getting there, and I think that's really exciting. And we'll talk in the next episode about how to use these medicines, how we counsel, when to expect progress, all of those kind of fun everyday things. So thank you all for listening. If you want to learn more, please go to the Alopecia Areata Learning Zone on MedThority, and we will catch you back at the next episode where we will talk about treatment.